Welcome to episode 19 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Sean Sheehy, a Chicago paper artist who uses pop-ups to take full advantage of the expressive potential of a book's imagery, allowing for moving three-dimensional form within the book format. We discussed Sean's career trajectory from design school to discovering book arts and how he incorporates handmade paper into his artist books and trade editions. We also touched on the state of paper engineering today. Hi, it's Helen Hebert with Paper Talk, and I'm at the Focus on Book Arts conference in Forest Grove, Oregon. It's June 24th, 2017, and it's sweltering, and I'm here with Sean Sheehy, who's also teaching. We're both teaching at this conference. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Helen.
How are you doing?
Great.
Good.
Yeah.
So I remember the first time I met you, actually. It was at a Friends of Dard Hunter conference in Portland.
Right.
I think that was the first time. And Andrea Peterson introduced us, and
right.
I remember going to Powell's Books and looking at the pop-up books section there with you.
Mm-hmm.
I had never done that with someone else, like looking at pop-ups and opening them.
Geeking out a little bit.
It was really fun. We geeked out. So tell me how you got interested in paper. Was it through pop-ups or?
Definitely through pop-ups.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when I was a graphic design student, I chose to solve a design problem for a capstone design class.
And where was that?
At the Madison Area Technical College
uh-huh.
in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It was an excellent, excellent experience.
Mm.
And so the choice that I made was to make a pop-up book. And it wasn't terribly complicated. It was more image-based, really, than it was structural. But the writing, did the illustration, did the pop-ups. But the execution was me running around through all of the Madison art stores and looking for different kinds of interesting paper and then slapping it all together with rubber cement and laser copies for the printing. And it was a lot of fun. It was super well received. And it sparked some ideas with me, but I didn't have any idea where that was going to land.
Right.
And then by sheer luck and force of nature, I discovered the MFA program in Book and Paper Arts at Columbia College in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There in my last semester of design school, and was aggressively recruited by then director Marilyn Sword.
Ah.
And immediately recognized the possibilities of looking at this book that I just made that was super fun and going to a place where I could develop the studio skills to kind of fill in all of the gaps of what was
right.
missing in that first book, one of which absolutely was papermaking. Because the idea of then making that whole book by hand, binding it beautifully and correctly,
mm-hmm.
printing it well,
mm-hmm.
it was really exciting. So that book, basically got me the fellowship that got me into grad school.
Wow.
And, and without question, during that course of study, my primary focus was papermaking.
Uh-huh.
I took more papermaking classes than anything else. I think I only took one binding class and only one or two printing classes. And all of which, of course, was with Andrea Peterson, who you mentioned earlier.
But the end goal was always pop-ups. So I'm curious about
yeah.
the.
Yeah.
Had you looked at a lot of published pop-up books? Because yours are really unique because you make the paper. But
mm-hmm.
how did you get that idea? And you mentioned that you were running around art supply stores looking for different papers. So there obviously mm-hmm. was. Do you think you were trying to be unique, or you? You didn't know about commercial printing? I'm just curious about that, sort of.
Yeah. Certainly, I'm not an amazing illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I can draw well enough to for what I need. Mm-hmm. So the images in that first book were silhouette.
Right.
So if I'm going to cut all of these images out of a single sheet, then yeah. I wanted a really evocative sheet.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
So put that aside. All of my hand gestures, I'm sure, are showing up very well in the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and breaking the fourth wall.
Yep.
For me then to go to grad school and learn how to make paper, it was partly wanting things to be really fine
mm-hmm.
and really beautifully made.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I really appreciated getting to a point where I had total control.
Yeah.
Because like when I was looking around in medicine for papers, I'm like, I need this to be a little more green. I need this to be a little more furry, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then I'm making my own sheets and I can get them as green and furry as I want.
Right.
And that was just deeply satisfying. And like many of us in the book arts, you know, I'm a control guy. So give me the control and I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, how did that evolve through graduate school and beyond?
So during graduate school, then I basically took a year during the course of study and literally remade that book from uh-huh. design school. And it was the only pop-up book that I made as a grad student. There just was too much other new stuff mm-hmm. to get under my belt.
Right.
But definitely continued the study of pop-ups independently
mm-hmm.
and started to generate ideas for what I wanted to do after I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And yeah, immediately after graduation, and you know, starting work as an independent studio artist, I jumped right into my first postgraduate school pop-up book, which was Welcome to the Neighborhood, which is the one that now exists as a mass market
uh-huh.
product.
Uh-huh.
And and went
so
to
first you created a small handmade edition, or
right, yeah, that was a limited edition project mm-hmm. of 10 copies.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And talk just a little bit about planning out the book. Like, how many different kinds of papers and how many sheets of each and sort of that process.
Yeah. For Welcome to the Neighborhood.
Well, just, yeah. Just to give an idea.
Yeah. All right, so I made...
It doesn't have to be exact.
Because it won't. So I made 10 copies. There are 8 spreads.
Uh-huh.
8 spreads, 8 pop-up spreads. The book is 7x9
mm-hmm.
closed. And, part of my training, as I mentioned, is a graphic designer.
Right.
So one of the ways that I was seeking unity in a designed project was through color, unified
mm-hmm.
color.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose a palette. And the palette had probably somewhere between 8 and 10 colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used those throughout. So let's say that many colors multiply times maybe 20 parent sheets
mm-hmm.
of 25x35,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And then they were all pulp dyed.
Yeah.
And after sheet forming, most of them went through a second layer of colorants to add spots and splashes and stripes or whatever, just to add more pizzazz, a sense of pattern.
With what medium?
With Procyon fiber reactive dyes.
So painted on, or how?
Painted
how,
on, or
to
dip
the dry dyed. Sheet.
Dry sheets,
okay.
Dip dyed as
oh,
well.
Okay.
Yeah, either.
And so I know the pop-up books, I've seen how they are, and graphic design printing, I'm familiar with the processes where everything is laid out to efficiently use a sheet. Did you do any planning like that for your books, or did you just, I mean, obviously you planned how many sheets you would need to produce this edition, but
was there
a certain, like a die diagram for die cutting, but you probably hand cut, I don't know.
That first book was entirely hand-cut.
Wow. Right.
Yeah. And I hired a couple of people to help me, for sure.
Yeah.
Rhiannon Alpers, who many people in the scene know.
Yeah.
Jen Thomas, who not so many people in the scene know, though she also graduated from the same MFA program. There was no ganging required. Since everything was hand cut, it's just basically printing out patterns from a laser printer and then fixing those patterns to the parent sheet, kind of like cutting patterns for garment construction.
Okay.
Cutting through both layers at once.
Oh.
So cutting one individual piece at a time, just keeping things tight. And conserving, sure. Yeah.
Wow.
The fiber blend for those sheets, to throw that in as well, was basically 50 cotton, 50 abaca. And this was the second pop-up book that I made out of handmade, the first one being during graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And different from that first one, which had simple structure and was illustration dependent, the second one was very sculptural. Mm-hmm. And it was not illustration dependent. So I was looking for a really tough paper that would be card weight, 200 GSM, essentially. Mm-hmm. And pop-ups fatigue, and pop-ups break, and pop-ups tear. And I was excited about throwing some abaca in there and trying not to let that happen. But I also was going to be printing on these sheets, so I wanted to keep some softness in there, so therefore the blend. And it worked like a champ. And it's basically, I've tweaked the formula to 75 cotton, 25 abaca at this point. That makes a little bit more sense for the processes.
Do you beat them separately and mix them, or do you beat them at the same time?
Start the abaca, run it for a good amount of time, and then throw the cotton in at the end.
I had a question. Where do you make your paper?
Okay, so, you know, for the first couple of rounds, especially after grad school, where I was teaching classes at Columbia for a while, I was working in the studios at Columbia, so I used Columbia studios.
Right.
And it was great because those studios were terrific.
Right.
They were amazing. Now, for the past two projects, I've made my sheets at the Kalamazoo Book Arts Center, Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is about an hour and 45 minutes by Amtrak. Super close. Big props to Jeff Abshear, who runs the joint. And both times I've been there, that I've worked there, I've been in the studio for a week or for 2 weeks and had the place to myself, and it's a fully functioning professional studio. Lots of space, good size equipment. They've got two beaters, 2 1-pounders, and yeah, it's just terrific. It's really terrific.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and I forgot to ask, who taught you papermaking? Who did you take classes with at Columbia College?
Andrea, which I didn't mention.
Oh, you did. Okay, Andrea Peterson.
Andrea Peterson.
Thanks.
And a little bit Marilyn, a little bit.
Marilyn.
But she was mostly administrative at
the
time.
Right. Okay. And then, so now you mentioned a commercial publication.
Yeah.
Was that kind of always a goal, or did that just evolve, or just talk about how that?
Yeah. I would say that ever since I was a student of education, which preceded being a student of art and a student of design, 3-degree guy. In an education program, one studies children's literature as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a book family. And so it certainly was always kind of in the back of my head that it would be fun to do this, but lots of people feel like that's a fun idea.
Because
it would be. It would be. It is.
Yeah.
And certainly going to a book arts school, the idea of crossing that line into the commercial realm continued to be interesting, but I was completely ready and accepting of the idea of remaining in the fine art scene.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of advantages, you know, having total control over a project and, making it at your own pace and having the freedom of that.
Right. And we should mention these books were collected by special collections.
Yeah.
Libraries and perhaps
almost exclusively
private collectors.
Yeah, mostly special collections libraries. Yeah. And, you know, for sure, after I made the first couple of books, I started sending them around and sending out query letters. You know, I've got a nice file, nice thick file of rejection letters.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a casual ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, it was entirely a fluke that I ultimately made the jump. A woman in Chicago, actually there's two women, who run a company called Glue and Paper.
Uh-huh.
And Amanda was going to be going to New York for the New York City Book Fair.
Oh.
And she said to me, you know, go to this fair. I'm happy to take one of your books along with me if you want.
Right.
We didn't talk. We didn't sign anything.
Uh-huh.
It was very casual. And she shopped it around, and yeah, Candlewick bit. And so, you know, all of the rest emerged from that. Luck is the most important part.
This episode is sponsored by the 2018 12 Months of Paper calendar. Join a DIY paper community and create fun and beautiful objects for your home with this combination how-to book and calendar all in one. The calendar is filled with 12 fun paper projects for the whole family to create together. 12 months and 12 projects feature a list of materials and tools you'll need to complete the project, plus step-by-step photos and easy-to-follow instructions. An additional custom paper pack features a curated collection of decorative papers from around the world. No need to source your own supplies. Join the 25 Days of Paper Club December 1st through 25th, 2017, and create these paper projects in an online class with Helen, that's me, as I guide you through the projects with videos, paper tips, resources, and extras. A private classroom Facebook group will allow you to ask questions and get to know other paper enthusiasts. For more information and to order your calendar, please visit HelenHebertStudio.com. That's H-E-L-E-N H-I-E-B-E-R-T studio.com. Thanks.
So handmade paper is involved in that book also, right?
Yeah, so for these commercial projects, right, which obviously are not printed on handmade paper,
right,
because it's deeply cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
But the publisher, you know, they've been around the block many times. They've seen everything.
Sure. Yeah.
But they were very excited about someone who's illustration style, and I put that in finger quotes that you can't see, because my structures are built out of handmade paper. They like the tooth and the color and the richness.
Uh-huh.
And so when we were making arrangements, they said, we like this book. We like the concept of this book. We like the structures. We love the surfaces. We want all of these things in a commercial version. So we're going to choose a commercial stock that is matte and toothy to get close. And then you're going to build all of the flat, camera-ready art from handmade sheets that will get scanned. And then the scans will be used for the printing. And they, in fact, then also had a really fancy high-end scanner that has a lot of internal lighting that's directional.
Right.
And so it creates shadow on the tooth of the sheet to really capture the texture. In fact, it's so fussy that when they did the first scans and then did the first color proof of the book and sent the proof back to me, everything was grayed out by maybe 10 to 15%.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it and I'm thinking, oh, this isn't good. What's going on here?
Right.
And we realized that there was so much tooth to the sheet and so much shadow, shadow was cast by the tooth, that it was those shadows in the sheet that were adding that extra. So they just, you know, they photoshopped it out and it was fine.
Yeah,
it was
amazing,
fine.
Amazing.
So yeah, for the past two commercial books, all of the artwork has been created from handmade paper made in Kalamazoo.
Right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So it's Welcome to the Neighborhood.
Welcome to the Neighborhood.
And what's the second one?
So the second one, which is 15 months away yet from release, another one of my artist books called Beyond the Sixth Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
So just like Neighborhood, it's a bestiary.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Neighborhood, this one is more of a fiction. It's post-apocalyptic. We're looking beyond the current extinction event, imagining what creatures might survive. So the colors are all a little muted, a little bleak. It's a much simpler book visually than Neighborhood is.
How do you come up with your palette? Is it like happenstance in the vat? Do you have... Sometimes I use paint swatches. I pick out and make those colors, but I have no idea. I'm just curious how you...
Yeah, so you're talking to a designer, a trained designer. Right. So, you know, Pantone chips in our world.
Okay, so similar.
It's very similar, yeah.
So you come up... Yeah, right. Okay, so I'd love for you to talk a little about the production process for a pop-up book. So so the publisher is making these images, as you described, and then once you have a proof that looks good, what happens next? The book gets printed? Does it go to China?
Yeah, for me, it's nothing. Right. So,
no, I just... People might not know how pop-ups are fabricated.
Yeah, so...
Commercially,
And to go back one step...
Yep.
A publisher says to me, we want this book to look exactly like the artist book version. But, of course, we're changing everything.
Right.
Because we have to make it market ready.
Yeah.
So the first big step, of course, is a fine editing, a serious rewriting... A re-engineering. Everything's still looking and reading virtually the same, but it's all dialed up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm sending text files to a publisher, and there's tons of back and forth on that, going through proofreaders and copy editors, etc. All of the shapes, the outlines, the die lines, are created in Illustrator. And, of course, I'm developing those to make the initial proof copy, but I'm sending those very same files off to the publisher, who are then going to send them somewhere in Southeast Asia to a production company who's going to use those for fabricating the dies that will be used for the cutting. And then the third thing that I need to supply to them is the camera-ready art that I mentioned earlier, which is basically taking each piece in the book, taking the die line, establishing the pattern or the color that that's required in that space, and then sort of inputting that color into that shape so it can get printed and cut. And then essentially I'm out. I send them all those files. They forward all of those files. They're checking in with me periodically to make sure everything is staying on track.
Right.
But then it's, you know, it's the waiting game at the end.
So they're printing. And then die cutting. And then there's a bunch of hand assembly. Have you ever witnessed?
Only on video. Yeah.
Right.
Mostly from Robert Sabuda, who's been there a couple of times.
Right. And so do you, someone at the printing company is responsible for... figuring that out and how the assembly part. Do you have to give instructions? I mean, obviously you engineered this, and how does that get figured out, how it gets put together?
Yeah. A lot of it is behind the scenes. Behind a curtain that I do not go behind. I do give them glue positions. A lot of that is labeled. Folds, of course, are all labeled. But it is the people that run those production companies that look at a model and they figure out the production efficiencies and strategies for getting it all put together.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They're good at it.
Right.
And they know how to translate what I've made and give directions in right. my country of yeah. origin.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Okay, so how long does the whole project take? You said it's 15 more months for this new book, yeah. but how long has that been going on already?
We signed contracts in 2015.
Okay.
On this, 2015.
Okay.
So,
yeah, so three years-ish.
Three
like
years-ish
that.
On this
oh,
one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Which was faster than the first one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. And is there anything coming down the pipeline?
Mass market?
Or what else are you working on?
Anything? All right. So I also just released my latest artist book edition. It's not entirely done, but it is released.
Uh-huh.
15 copies are done and out in the world.
Oh, cool.
And it is the third in my botanicals series. So it's the first is a wildflower book, the second is a vegetable book, a vegetable herbal, and the third is a plants of the winter holidays book. So it doesn't have to do really with anything contemporary holiday.
Right.
It's leaning a lot on older traditions because it's just the plants.
Right.
And it's a little bit of a political piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of looking at the excess of the holidays and trying to strain out a lot of the excess.
Oh, nice.
Come down to what's essential.
Right.
So unlike any other book I've ever made, it's a palette of six colors.
Uh-huh.
And like others in the Botanic series, they're all commercial stock, which just makes it faster and cheaper, quite frankly, for me.
Right.
Though I have every ambition of my next artist book project to be handmade, so we can watch out for that. And it's going to be my biggest edition ever. There's going to be 50 copies of
wow.
this holiday book.
Cool.
And kind of blocked off the rest of this year to finish production and
mm-hmm.
get this
mm-hmm.
out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just thought of this. Let's mention the Movable Book Society, which
yeah.
I know you're very active in.
Yeah.
Yeah, just talking a little bit about that.
Yeah. Movable Book Society will have its 25th anniversary next year,
mm-hmm.
founded by Anne Montanaro Staples. And it's an organization that was initially meant to serve the interests of pop-up book collectors, movable book collectors. And when I became a member of the organization, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, something like that. I was interested in meeting other engineers
sure.
and talking to
right.
other engineers. There are very few of us in this world,
mm-hmm.
and we live far from each other. And as the organization matures, it's kind of experiencing a little bit of an interesting shift in that the collector base is being reduced a little bit. There aren't a lot of young people that are joining who are collectors, though there are some. And a lot of the youth are they're makers, they're engineers, both
mm-hmm.
on the commercial side and on the artist book side. So it's really kind of exciting that it's becoming a little bit more of a guild sort of event.
Right.
Than it is historians and archivists and conservators and folks like that. We'll have our next conference next year in Kansas City. Excited about
yeah,
that.
I hope to go to that one.
Super. Yeah.
And I wonder what you know about sort of education. I know graphic design, packaging design.
Mm-hmm.
Like how does a paper engineer... There's not really a place. I think Robert Cejuda started a course at Pratt.
Right.
And now Kyle Ullman is teaching there.
And Sam Ida.
And Sam Ida.
I believe.
So
is
that's
teaching
in Brooklyn.
Some of those. Yeah, that's in Brooklyn.
Do you know of anyone else sort of?
Emily.
Emily
Martin.
Martin
a semester
teaches.
Every other or so.
Right.
At Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I'm aware of.
And then there's a few people like Carol Barton who teach workshops.
Right.
And
Colette Fu teaches workshops.
Colette Fu, right. You.
Right. And me.
Yeah. So it's
mostly autodidactical.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Though, you know, because we've seen such a big wave in the artist book workshop scene, there are these workshops.
Right.
And lots of them are for a weekend, for an afternoon. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going to get a training, training.
But you get a taste, that turns into something.
Yeah. I mean, there's a woman, Eugene Kim, who's from Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And she learned how to make pop-up books on her own as a high school student.
Yeah.
And she's a prodigy.
Yeah.
So, you know, no surprise. And she TA'd for me at a weekend workshop at the Minneapolis Center for the Book. And then she went to
Maryland,
if you're listening. Maryland, Micah.
Micah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And then she got hired by
Up with Paper. Yeah.
I'm glad all these details are readily available to you. Yeah, and she's going gangbusters. She's a real talent.
Yeah.
She's a real talent.
That's exciting.
But no deep academic training.
Right.
Just like with everyone else.
Yeah. Cool.
You know, and we're seeing this big upsurge in European pop-up books. And I'm wondering if there are some European institutions that are starting to support that. I don't know anything about it. I haven't researched it.
Right.
But, you know, France is the place right now. France is Marion Bataille. Lots of people know her. Her alphabet books.
Yeah.
Philippe Ougy. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's got 3 or 4 titles that are out in the market right now. There's a couple of, there's an organization.
Yeah.
It's done some really great ones as well. Yeah. France is on fire.
Okay, cool. All right, France, great, Sean. Is there anything else we should know about you and paper and pop-ups? Have we covered it?
Come visit me at my studio in Chicago, I've got a flat file with lots of yummy, handmade paper in it, just waiting to get made into something.
Cool. Sean Sheehy, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay updated is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio in Colorado. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com. This wraps up our episode, and if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis, you'll notice I've done a bit more editing than usual. This is thanks to the help of Gary A. Hansen. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about Gary and his services. Subscribe to this series via iTunes. You can also leave a review. I'd appreciate that. And listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. Talk to you soon.